are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, here we are. It's a Locked On 49ers, Locked On Bengals crossover. Brian Peacock here, host of Locked On 49ers, and I am with the co-hosts of Locked On Bengals. We've got Joe and Jake. You can find Joe on Twitter at Joe Goodberry and Jake at Jake_NFL. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, I am at BD Peacock. Usually what we get here with the crossovers is the opposing fans get mad when we say something good about the team that we cover. I don't know how you guys feel about the Bengals, but I think 49ers fans right now are feeling pretty good about the 49ers. So we'll see when we do our predictions at the end how high we are on our teams. But it's a pleasure to talk to both of you. I'm excited for week two of the NFL season.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to talk to you too, Brian, and 49ers fan bases out there. But, you know, I think after talking to the Seahawks last week, I kind of felt like I sold the Bengals a little too positively. And then they went out there and pretty much dominated them. So I wonder how they're feeling this week.
that was probably a nice surprise, I think, for Bengals fans. Or it was a nice surprise on my end as a 49ers person, not following the Bengals, thinking the Bengals could be a team that's on a slippery slope right now heading into 2019. And it seemed to not be the case. I guess we're going to start here with the 49ers offense against the Bengals defense. I know there's one guy, and I do this. I'm a big draft guy. Joe, I know you're a big draft guy as well. And I do this Shadow 49ers draft, and Carl Lawson was one of my Shadow 49ers draft picks. I've always liked him a lot, and it's nice to see him healthy. I was worried about his health coming into 2019. When the 49ers have the ball, what are they going to be looking at with that Bengals defense? What's the strength of that defense?
Yeah, the strength is that defensive line. They're pretty deep. We feel pretty good about them. The one unknown we had going into the season, especially from preseason because they didn't show anything, was how they're going to use this front, specifically Carl Lawson, because the last couple years, Marvin Lewis just used him as a right defensive end in their nickel packages. And so if the team was running the ball, the opposite team, and the Bengals were down, Carl Lawson didn't get to play. But if the Bengals were scoring points and it was a passing game, Carl Lawson got a lot of snaps. It wasn't very efficient. It allowed the other team to control how often he was playing. But when you look at it now, the Bengals come out, and we thought they may do this. Keeping only four linebackers on this team, we said, well, maybe they go to a 3-4 defense and use those edge guys like Carl Lawson, Sam Hubbard, and Carlos Dunlap as edge players, so really not outside linebackers. You guys know you play this similar defense in San Francisco, but that's what the Bengals showed in Seattle week one.
So that's a little bit of what we're seeing from the Bengals defense. But how about the San Francisco offense? We know that Jerick McKinnon's hurt. George Kittle is a massive threat. I don't know much about the weapons outside of those guys. Are the wide receivers anything we should be scared of? How's the offensive line looked? It looked like they graded pretty well from Pro Football Focus in week one. What can you tell us about what to expect from the 49ers offensive strengths?
I think up front, everything should be as consistent as you would want an offensive line, or as most offensive lines could be in the NFL right now. It seems like every single team around the league, one of their weaknesses is somewhere on the offensive line. For the 49ers, it's probably their depth on the O-line, but they're returning five starters from last year, which I think is huge, and they've all played together for a full season, and they played pretty well in that last game. They actually didn't run the ball all that great against the Buccaneers, but they kept Jimmy Garoppolo fairly clean. He was sacked one time. So I think the offensive line will be maybe not a wow offensive line, but just a pretty consistent, solid line. And the fact that they got Weston Richburg back just in time, he played zero snaps in the preseason. He got a knee procedure done in the offseason, and he was playing through it hurt all last year. So for him to be back and be 100% and for him to make it back in time to start game one, and he played 100% of the snaps Sunday in Tampa Bay, was, I think, a huge deal for the 49ers. And seeing him at his full strength, because Kyle Shanahan loves to have a good center in his offense, and Richburg's athleticism, I think, will be huge for the running game and getting out and reaching linebackers, and just that athleticism will be huge. And Mike McGlinchey already was one of the better run-blocking offensive tackles in the league, so him improving as a pass blocker, I think, will be key for that 49ers line as well. And, of course, Joe Staley, just staying Joe Staley and not seeing a decline in his skills will be huge. But the wide receivers you asked about, I don't know, and Kyle Shanahan himself doesn't even know. He seriously has no idea who the best receiver is on the team, who the starters are going to be week to week. And all throughout the offseason, Dante Pettis, the second-year guy, was penciled in as that number one wide receiver, and he was playing the flanker spot. And then week one rolled around, and And Kyle Shanahan had kind of said some things that, you know, Pettis needs to play with more urgency. And then they show up and they line up, and Dante Pettis wasn't in the game to start. And it was actually the rookie Deebo Samuel out there at flanker, even though he was playing pretty much the X the whole preseason. And Marquise Goodwin was on the other side. And then when they went three wide, it was Richie James in the slot because Trent Taylor is hurt, and Dante Pettis was still on the bench. So Pettis only got two snaps, which was quite surprising to most onlookers in that game. And Shanahan said afterwards that it was a little bit of a mistake on his part, and he wanted to get Pettis more work, but it was pretty clear that he wasn't at the top of the depth chart right now for the 49ers. So it's Deebo Samuel, and it's Marquise Goodwin. And Deebo Samuel had a really big boy first down where he caught a slant in traffic, was able to fight through the corner for a third down conversion. I think it was third and 12. And it's that type of physicality, that type of play that I think the 49ers are going to love from Deebo Samuel. And what they already love about Deebo and the fact that he's already starting means I think Debo's the guy to, you know, if you're a fantasy football player, Deebo's probably the guy to own right now, because it looks like he's not going to relent and he'll be that starting flanker pretty much the rest of the year. And we'll see where Dante Pettis fits in. But I think the big worry right now is less than wide receiver. It's more about Jimmy Garoppolo and his consistency coming back from that knee injury. And he didn't look great early in that game, threw a really ugly pick six, but they really picked it up in the second half and he started looking better. And that passing offense is all about George Kittle. He was he had 10 targets in that game. The next closest was, I think, Deebo with 3 targets. So it's all about Kittle. It's early and often to Kittle. They're going to hit him short and let him run after the catch. They threw some tight end screens to him, and they're going to try to hit him deep down the seam. So it's all about George Kittle. I would put 2 or 3 guys on him if I were the Bengals.
Yeah, I saw Jimmy G, his average depth of target was the lowest in the league, or amongst the lowest. It was really the opposite of what we saw in from the Bengals offense. The Bengals were just chucking it downfield, and it was really only hope to create offensive plays, and they did with John Ross. But that's what I was going to ask you. Was it just checkdowns? Was it just rust going through the offense, or was it just nothing downfield because of the receivers?
I think it's just a little bit of a continuity thing there, and I think Tampa was doing a good job of making sure they didn't get beat deep and making the 49ers earn it and make the 49ers, you know, drive their way down the field slowly and methodically. And early in the game, they weren't able to do that. And eventually they were able to pick it up. But I think it was a lot on Garoppolo and a little bit on the play calling. And there was some weird field position stuff. There was a blocked kick in there. And so it was just an awkward game and a really sloppy game to start. So I think it'll look a lot different just because it's week 2, and I think they've got their legs under them now. And Jimmy Garoppolo's got a full game under his belt, and he didn't play much in the preseason at all. So I expect things to look a little bit different against the Bengals. So I wouldn't even expect it to really look the same, except for George Kittle being a guy that's completely really the emphasis of the entire offense. But I would like to see them run the ball a little bit better. They didn't quite get going, and Tevin Coleman is hurt, and he's going to be out for a few weeks now. So it's going to be Matt Breida number 1 and Raheem Mostert number 2. And all those guys run 4.3, so they all do the same thing and can gouge you very quickly. So if you're not gap sound, and I think Matt Breida is the best runner of all of them anyway, so I think there won't be any fall off at all for the 49ers running game. If anything, it'll be a little bit better with Matt Breida in there over Tevin Coleman. That's what I expect. One question I do have real quick before we move on to the other side of the ball about that Bengals defense is, what's the back end looking like? I know that they played the Seahawks really well. I saw a few plays. I think Lockett only had one catch, and it was that touchdown catch. And then DK Metcalf, who's one of my favorites, a shadow 49er, by the way, who was making a few plays, and it was nice to see him get out there as a rookie and make some. I think he had the best rookie receiving game ever for the Seahawks. But what's the back end looking like? What's the secondary looking like for the Bengals?
I think we're seeing some coverages from the Bengals that we haven't seen before under new defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo. They're doing some rotations after the snap that are a little bit unusual, at least to my eye, stuff like rolling B.W. Webb out of the slot into a deep quarter and rotating after the snap that way. The starting outside corners, I'd say, are pretty solid. Drake Kirkpatrick is probably an average NFL corner, and William Jackson is a guy that the Bengals have a lot of hopes for. He had a little bit of a rough week 1. He gave up what should have been a catch to Tyler Lockett at some point and got beat by DK Metcalf's size another time. The safeties are, again, something that we thought would be a strength, but Jesse Bates has struggled through the preseason and struggled early this season, but he still has great free safety, center field kind of range to him. So the secondary should be pretty solid. For me, I think the biggest threat for the Bengals on San Francisco's team is easily George Kittle. And then it comes down to, can a better offensive line in San Francisco deal with the strength of the Bengals defense, which is that defensive line, and how do those matchups play out?
So yeah, George Kittle versus those Bengals linebackers is a fun one. And George Kittle, you think you have him down. You think you have the angle on him, and he outruns the angle. He's really so much more athletic than you think, and I think he shocks teams the first time they get on the field with him because he is so fast and such a good runner. You mentioned John Ross a minute ago, and I've got big questions there. So let's flip this thing and talk Bengals offense versus 49ers defense.
Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's like blue, the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guys who want that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Most guys talk a good game, but if you're one and done, Blue Chew can even help you follow through for round two. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made right in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use special promo code Locked On. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's Blue, BlueChew, BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast.
We teased John Ross there, and I saw the big game he had, and it was really cool to see his breakout, because there was people that were completely writing him off for dead, and I'm sure Bengals fans were super angry about spending a number 9 overall pick on a guy who hadn't done much so far in his career. But when I saw I didn't really look at the whole game or anything, but I saw a few plays, and one of those John Ross plays was completely on Tedrick Thompson, the free safety. So I hope 49ers safety Tarvarius Moore can read the ball a little bit better. I think one of those plays completely shouldn't have happened. But what are you seeing from John Ross? I know the speed is there. Is there a little more technique to his game as well coming into this year?
Well, the thing is, the speed being fully there is actually the first time we've seen it. Last year, he averaged 10 yards per catch, even though he did have 7 touchdowns that year. We didn't see him at all, really, his rookie season. Didn't catch one single pass. So even last year, you felt like he never got to that last gear, if even maybe the final 2 gears. So he was never able to take the top off. He didn't have 2 big catches the way he did in this game. So seeing him out there, seeing him run these speed outs and how these corners were starting to bail on him, especially in the second half, it was really impressive. I got done watching the film today, and I thought they could have thrown it to him 20 times because the corners were just bailing out of there instantly because they knew he would scorch them downfield. Now, the negative is he had 3 drops, and in fact, he bobbled a couple catches that he did have. So it's still an issue with him. He had 7 drops last year. He caught about 35% of his targets last year. He's been a very inefficient receiver, but he's a big play waiting to happen. He's a bomb. At any moment you throw him the ball, you don't know if it's going to be positive or negative. Everyone just holds their breath. I mean, I think both sidelines are holding their breath when the ball is targeted to John Ross in excitement and in fear. So right now he's still a big play weapon, and he is, even though he hasn't been super efficient. And that's exciting because the Bengals need that. The other receivers are decent and good. Tyler Boyd is a very good slot possession receiver. They threw a bunch of balls to Tyler Eifert, who's healthy again somewhat. He doesn't look as quick and fast, but they didn't use him that way either. Well, he hauled in everything his way. And they've got some other possession guys, and Damian Willis, who's an undrafted rookie, and Alex Erickson, who's been a backup slot and return man. So they need the speed from John Ross, and we're lucky to get it in week 1.
So the 49ers will counter with Akello Witherspoon and Richard Sherman outside. I wonder, do either of them have the speed to stay with Ross? And then I wonder, well, is it going to matter? Seattle came in with Jadeveon Clowney threatening the Bengals' patchwork offensive line, to be generous. And Nick Bosa had a nice rookie premiere. Dee Ford's out there for the 49ers now, along with DeForest Buckner. Where do you see this game coming down to when the Bengals are on the field?
Yeah, when it comes to those defensive backs you mentioned, and Sherman and Akella Witherspoon, both of them had really good games last week, especially Witherspoon, him playing with confidence, him playing with kind of that urgency. Similar guy, more of a finesse player coming out of college like Dante Pettis that I mentioned before. So seeing him play with confidence and urgency and a little bit of physicality, I think, is huge. And he was looking really good. Not only the pick six that he had that was thrown right to him, that was more about the pass rush and forcing Jameis Winston into some mistakes, but he had a couple other pass breakups and was just really good in coverage. But I think it's an advantage for the Bengals to have faced the Seahawks and now get to face the 49ers that are pretty much running the same defense and a lot of cover three and a lot of similar concepts from Robert Saleh, 49ers defensive coordinator, that came out of that Pete Carroll and Gus Bradley tree over there in Seattle. So a lot of cover three. So to me, it's not so much a one-on-one matchup, and maybe Jason Verrett, if he gets back healthy this week, and we all know how often he's injured, but he's such a dynamic player and such a quick twitch athlete when he is healthy. If there was a man-on-man matchup, I would say you would put Jason Verrett on John Ross. But it comes down to, especially watching that Seattle game and watching Tedrick Thompson screw things up in center field, it's all about the second-year free safety in Tarvarius Moore, because he's a 4-3 guy. He can run. Seeing him range sideline to sideline, I think, is the bigger key to keeping the top on for John Ross more than anything else. But really, the strength of the 49ers D, just like the Bengals, is that front and that defensive line. And they really got after Jameis Winston. And that was the thing. It was like, okay, if you can pressure Jameis Winston, he'll make mistakes. And that is exactly what happened last week. And Bosa was as advertised in his first game. He's dealing with a high ankle sprain that he just came back from. So he's not even 100%. He wasn't even able to change directions hardly. And he's still so sound with his hands and was able to pressure the quarterback, I think, six times. I think he got six pressures in the game. D Ford coming off the edge, forcing a fumble. And of course, DeForest Buckner is just an Iron Man, and he's going to be DeForest Buckner. And they still have two other first rounders in Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas. They can filter in and rush from the inside in nickel situations. So that's the strength of the defense, that front. So pressuring Andy Dalton and trying to make him make some mistakes is huge. And they weren't able to do that last year at all. They had no edge pressure, and they got more interceptions in week one this year than they had all of last season. They only had two last year, and they got three last week. So that's going to be, I think, the huge thing for the 49ers. And of course, a guy that nobody talks about, the most underrated player on the 49ers team probably, that I've got to mention, is a linebacker, Fred Warner, who's been just rock solid in the middle for that 49ers defense.
If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? Put that knowledge to use. If you're listening to this show, you're obviously a well-informed football fan, whether you're betting on the 49ers, betting on some of the other games around the league, make yourself a little cash with MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet this football season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings, and no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
When the 49ers defense lines up there, and that front is up against the Bengals offensive line, how suited is that offensive line for Cincinnati? I know they're really banged up to face that 49ers front.
Well, yeah, the offensive line isn't in the best shape right now. Not only was it bad coming into the year, but they draft Jonah Williams, number one. He got hurt in minicamp, OTAs, and he's out for the year. From what we expect, he's on the PUP list right now. They may get him back in December. But he was going to be the left tackle. And Clint Bowling, who was their veteran 10-year, 9-year guy at left guard, he retired. And they were going to move Cordy Glenn to left guard and go through the rest of the motions from there. But what ended up happening is, with the Bowling retirement, with the Jonah Williams injury, they had to move Cordy Glenn back to left tackle. But Cordy Glenn has not been able to stay healthy throughout the latter half of his career, even slightly. So, of course, he's dealing with a concussion, couldn't play week one. He's not out of the protocol as of today, as of recording this. It was Andre Smith, longtime Bengal, and still hanging around somehow, playing left tackle for them. Bobby Hart at right tackle, who they inexplicably re-signed in the offseason, gave him $21 million, 3 years, and he was still pretty poor, even though he actually had some moments on Sunday. But they've got a rookie fourth rounder at left guard in Michael Jordan. They benched Billy Price, last year's first rounder at center, in favor of Trey Hopkins, who ended up being PFF's number one center for week one. So that might have been an upgrade right there. And at right guard is a veteran free agent they signed from Buffalo, John Miller. Basically, it's a bad unit. But the Bengals used a lot of play action, a lot of misdirection, and they threw the ball 51 times. They didn't even try to run it because they couldn't. And that's been the big issue, really, with this offense is throughout preseason and week one. I mean, zero semblance of a running game. They're not even averaging 2 yards per carry. So if you count, you know, the whole summer we've had here, it's scary. And you wonder if getting Joe Mixon back, if he's healthy, because he's dealing with an ankle sprain right now, if he doesn't play, it could be bad again, and they might just throw it 50 more times.
Well, at least you don't have one of those old crusty head coaches that's like the hashtag establish the run coach, right? So that's probably at least a little bit less frustrating for you guys, I imagine.
Zach Taylor's still an establish the run kind of guy, but he was at least talking about it, and then he went out and didn't try to run the ball. The Bengals had the worst expected points added in the running game. I don't know if you saw that today. The grid came out. The Bengals running game was atrocious. They were giving up yards every time they went out there and tried to run the ball. They have one positive running play where I'd say they clearly won, which was an 11-yard run to Giovanni Bernard, the only time they got off a combo block and got to the second level. So if San Francisco watches the Seattle tape and sees, okay, we can do what the Patriots did to the Rams last year, put 5-6 guys on the line of scrimmage and put our middle linebacker in the middle of the field, the Bengals don't seem equipped to handle that again. And if that's the case, then they might become one-dimensional. And if the 49ers defensive line and the edge rushers are deeper than what we saw in Seattle, which they are on paper at the very least, it could be a long day for the Bengals if the 49ers are able to react well to the play action. And there's a lot of package plays I started to notice on my rewatch. Mm-hmm. And if the 49ers stay disciplined, it could be a long day for the Bengals offense. On the other hand, we still don't really know what to expect. We have about a game's worth of tape, and we'll see how variable they can be on a week-to-week basis, I think. And that's something that Joe and I are waiting for.
Yeah, that's a great point that pretty much everything we saw in week one will probably get completely flipped on its head, because that's just the way of the NFL in the early season, and things are definitely going to change. I guess we probably only have a couple minutes left. Should we do the predictions for this one?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, I'll let you guys go first. What do you guys have? Bengals, 49ers at home. You get to see the same defense 2 weeks in a row. I think that's an advantage.
I actually think the 49ers might be better than Seattle. I've said this to Jake a couple times, that I think the defense is better than Seattle's. So I think definitely the front line. I mean, I was going to ask you about how Solomon Thomas doing, because that's my guy, but I see he's kind of buried in the depth chart and being a role player, but, you know, that's okay. But and my point being is they're deep. Really, this Seattle had Jadeveon Clowney that you had to worry about. Sure, they've got some quality players in there that made plays and batted a bunch of balls, but I'm not nearly as concerned with Seattle's D-line as I am right now going into this 49ers game. So I think 49ers strength versus the Bengals weakness up front could tilt this game in the way the Bengals really can't afford. I like the 49ers here. I would say this is going to be a close game again. I'm going to go 24-21 San Fran.
And in my opinion, I'm taking a Bengals win here, but a similar margin of victory, maybe 24-21 Cincinnati, maybe 27-24. I think that Cincinnati exceeded expectations so wildly, 9.5-point dogs in the most hostile place to play in September. Seattle's record against opponents in the last few Septembers under Pete Carroll, they're blowing teams out in their home openers, outscoring them by a margin of over 100 points in the last few years. So I like the Bengals' chances just because I think that they might be a stronger team than we gave them credit for. But that being said, Joe Mixon, if he doesn't play, that's a problem. If Cordy Glenn doesn't play, that's a problem. I wouldn't be surprised to see the San Francisco defensive line tilt this thing. And the San Francisco offensive line certainly should be better than what we saw from Seattle last week, which could hamstring really the thing the Bengals are leaning on to make the defense work. That being said, it's George Kittle that really scares me, like I said in the first segment. And if George Kittle gets going, and the Bengals historically have had issues with tight ends, this hasn't reared its head yet in 2019, but that's a big thing to watch for me.
I think I'm pretty close to where Joe was on this one, and I was actually a little bit surprised that the Bengals, they are at home, but the Bengals are favored by 1.5 points, so pretty close there. And it's so hard to win on the road in this league, and for the 49ers, who won zero road games last year, to come out and go back-to-back road games and win in both is going to be difficult, but I think they can. But I think it'll be a close one. I think it might be a little more of a grinded-out, low-scoring affair, but last week, George Kittle Had two touchdowns called back because of penalties. I think this week the 49ers will tighten up some of those penalties, and we'll see George Kittle get to pay dirt. And I think the 49ers front can hassle the Bengals enough and come away with the 27-24 win on the road. Start 2-0 on the road, which would be quite a surprise for what the 49ers have been doing the last couple of years.
I think we see it as a coin flip together. Brian, thanks for joining us for this crossover Wednesday from Locked On 49ers. This has been your Locked On Bengals, Locked On 49ers Wednesday crossover episode.
It was a fun chat with the fellas from Locked On Bengals. Looking forward to the game Sunday. Tomorrow, be back right here with my guest, Nick Winkler, Locked On 49ers.